Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Here's your money briefing for Friday, May 28th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. The cost of buying a new home is soaring, with many buyers getting into bidding wars, and that's leaving a lot of people with a tough choice. Should they max out their budget or even go over budget to close on a mortgage? So, is it worth taking the plunge?
A young home buyer is supposed to stretch to buy that home at these historically low rates on the grounds that their income will go up over time and that they will grow into that payment very, very comfortably.
Or is that too risky?
And if we say that lending, stretching to lend is okay for individuals, then that's a short step away from saying lending to stretch is good for everyone. And that's exactly how credit bubbles fuel housing bubbles.
Coming up, we'll examine both sides of the issue with a pair of experts who've looked into this and come away with very different answers. That's after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
These can be frustrating times for prospective homebuyers, and especially young adults looking to buy their first home. Rising prices mean many will be forced to stretch their personal finances to submit a winning bid. But in this market, should they? Let's hear from both sides of the issue. We're joined now by Lori Goodman. She's Vice President for Housing Finance Policy and the founder of the Housing Finance Policy Center at the Urban Institute. Lori, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me here today.
And Susan Wachter is a professor of real estate and finance at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and from the Penn Institute for Urban Research. Susan, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Lori, I want to start with you. You feel that the time is right for millennials to buy a home, even if they have to stretch themselves financially. But young adults, just by virtue of where they are in their career, have limited funds, and many are carrying a lot of debt. So wouldn't it defy logic to buy a home in a seller's market where prices are rising at the fastest rate in 15 years?
That's a very good question. And, you know, I think basically what buying does for you is it locks your housing costs. And it locks your housing costs at historically low interest rates. And what that means is that, you know, you rent and your rental and the rental prices go up year after year. If you're young, chances are your income is rising, so you're locking your housing costs. And if you're stretching to buy now, as your income goes up over time, that will feel much, much more comfortable. And yes, prices have gone up a lot, but I don't think they're going down because housing is in such short supply. Meanwhile, you have locked rates at just historically low interest rates.
Now, Susan, you say millennials shouldn't stretch themselves and venture into the housing market now, but most young adults being renters, wouldn't it be better for them to look into a monthly payment in a mortgage rather than see their monthly rent potentially rise with inflation?
Absolutely. It's extremely important in today's market to do what you can to responsibly become a homeowner and get on that homeownership ladder. I totally agree with Lori that home ownership is the way to build wealth over the long run if you can keep your home. However, if you stretch, and the market right now really is lending in very responsible ways, so I am not as concerned about quote-unquote stretching under today's market conditions, because in fact, lending and lenders are very responsible about the terms in which they're making lending possible. But that's not always so, and we can't assume that that's going to be so going forward. In fact, it's not well discussed out there, it's little known, but very shortly, just in a matter of months, there's going to be a major regime shift, and borrowers will have the potential to be lured into what may be very dangerous loans. So the problem isn't that individuals may stretch, and you know, individuals have to make this decision based on their own circumstances. And the problem isn't that homeowning isn't wealth building over the long run. It absolutely is. The problem is if we get into a bubble mentality on two sides, bubble mentality on prices and bubble mentality on credit, where lenders, the 5,500 lenders out there, rush to undermine their lending standards to lure households who are renters to become homeowners, but only for the short run because it's not sustainable, because the loans they're making are too risky.
Okay, but Susan, let me ask you about interest rates. They're, of course, a big piece of the equation when buying a home. They've been steadily rising since hitting record lows last year, but they're still very low by historical standards. Why shouldn't buyers be taking advantage of them now?
Well, I think if they can responsibly, and with today's lending criteria, most borrowers will be using the very safe product and absolutely taking advantage of today's mortgage rates to responsibly borrow is a moment in time, particularly for millennials who are moving into that home, that stage of life where they want to start a family and also take advantage of the fact that they might be able to commute remotely and buy a bigger home so they can have a home office. All of that's terrific. And the wonderful thing is if you buy today with fixed rate mortgages at today's low mortgage rate, you will have that fixed rate mortgage going forward. That is, in my work, in my publications, I along with my co-author, Richard Green, call that, we name that the American mortgage. And the American mortgage is an extraordinary borrower-friendly mortgage because, in fact, stabilizes mortgage payments over time, just like Lori said. The problem is if you stretch and if the lender lures you into overstretching your ability to repay. And if we have a recession, and you know, hopefully we won't have a recession for a long time, but one cannot rule out a recession in another few years. It could happen. And if one member of the family loses their job and you're counting on both incomes, and if at the same time housing prices fall, you could lose your home. 8 million people lost their 8 million people went into foreclosure, households went into foreclosure the last time around. And an investment is not good if, in fact, investment in your home is not good, no matter how good it may look in the short run, if in the end you've lost your home. And it's not, we cannot say in the next recession that housing prices will not fall. The reason I say that is because the next recession may very well be combined with an increase in interest rates. And if that happens, then housing prices will fall.
And Laura, you don't think rising rates should deter first-time homebuyers, right?
So, I mean, I think it's important to realize that rates, as you pointed out, are, while they have gone up, they are still at generational lows. I mean, they are still very, very, very low in any sort of reasonable historical context. There's only about 8 months in the past 50 years when home prices have been higher than they are now. So I would argue that a young home buyer is supposed to stretch to buy that home at these historically low rates on the grounds that their income will go up over time and that they will grow into that payment very, very comfortably. I think Susan very articulately made the point that nothing is assured. You could lose your job. You want to be careful about how much you stretch. And while I think that there is some truth to that point, you want to be careful about how much you stretch, I think people can stretch a little bit more in this situation of historically low rates. Obviously, nothing is guaranteed in this life, but home ownership is the single best way to build wealth. There is no question that if you buy a home and you lose it, you're worse off than never having been, you're worse off than you were before. However, if you buy a home and you are able to sustain home ownership, you are an order of magnitude better off. And probabilistically, you're supposed to choose route number two. So, you know, I feel pretty strongly that people are supposed to stretch to buy that home in this period of historically low rates.
Now, I want to turn to the role a home plays in one's personal finances. Susan, home ownership is seen by many as being the best way to build long-term wealth. Shouldn't millennials try to build that wealth foundation as early as they can? What pitfalls do you see?
I don't. I actually think under today's lending criteria, if they can borrow and qualify for a mortgage, then they should, in fact, get on that homeownership ladder. My concern is that lending standards may erode, and we cannot guarantee that they will not. Housing finance right now is in a state of disarray, and there may be some unsettling changes coming. And if we say that lending, stretching to lend, is okay for individuals, then that's a short step away from saying lending to stretch is good for everyone. And that's exactly how credit bubbles fuel housing bubbles. We had that in the last great financial crisis, which occurred in the U.S., but similar crises which combined well-intentioned easing of lending standards to allow people to stretch because housing prices were rising, instead fueled the house price rise and led to unsustainable homeownership and systemic crises. That has to be prevented. So the right now, government entities like FHA and FHFA are overseeing lending standards so that loans, most loans, are safe loans. But that's about to change. And that change that will open up unsafe lending practices is something which all borrowers and the society as a whole need to be concerned about.
Can I just reply to that if you don't mind?
Yes, go ahead, Lori.
You know, I think it's important to bear in mind that the financial crisis was unique. You had a lot of oversupply going into the financial crisis. You had a huge amount of overbuilding. The amount of building way surpassed anything we had seen before. If you look at what's happening now, supply is just extremely limited. We're building less homes per capita than we were building in the 1960s. Supply is just extremely limited, and I think that puts a floor on home prices. And I think that's a sort of a crucial decision, a crucial difference. The second crucial difference between now and 2000 and the great financial crisis is that lending standards are actually fairly tight in a historical context. So while you may be willing to stretch more, your bank will put limits on how much you can stretch to get a mortgage. So chances are very good, if your bank is willing to give you a mortgage, chances are very good that you actually can afford that home or will grow into it very, very quickly.
Susan, you'd like to respond?
Thank you. It is true that, in fact, I'd like to reiterate what Lori has said. A major problem is short supplies, a scarcity of housing supply, and we must address that. And I'm working on that. Lori's working on that. There are others. That's a prime issue for society, the scarcity of supply of housing. However, scarcity supply of housing does not put a floor on price declines. Rather, if you get into a bubble mentality and expectation-driven housing price gains, that can lead to sharp declines in housing prices, even in economies with scarce supply of housing. My concern is that today's very responsible, and as Lori said, tight lending conditions are about to be potentially substantially eased. The debt-to-income ratio, and no one is in favor of a 43%, which is a limit. I'm not. I think it should and can be higher than 43%. But not to get too deep into the weeds here, if it's higher, it needs to be higher through compensating factors, which, in fact, the prime underwriters, GSEs, FHFA, and FHA, have kept their eye carefully on this to make sure that there are compensating factors when the debt-to-income ratio is substantially higher than 43%. But can you imagine if the debt-to-income ratio is 50%, 60%? That could happen without compensating factors, and that's my concern.
All right. Well, I thank you both for being here. Lori Goodman from the Urban Institute. Lori, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks very much for having me here today.
And Susan Wachter from the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and the Penn Institute for Urban Research. Susan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. Before we go, a quick programming note. We'll be off on Monday, May 31st for the Memorial Day holiday, and we'll be back again on June 1st. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.